Welcome to the Beards Next Door podcast,
presented by Beard Mountain,
where we talk all things beard, hobbies, work, women, and all that other shit too, with your hosts, Tim and Corey. So zip up and get ready, perv.
And we are live. Well,
live.
Not really live.
We're always live.
Yeah. Episode 18?
1-8.
Okay, right on.
Peyton Manning. 18. I love it. That's a tribute right there.
Peyton, my boy. Well, he's not in heaven, but he doesn't play for my team anymore.
So that was kind of sad.
He's dead to you.
Cheer.
He is dead.
Episode 18, The Beers Next Door. I am your host, Tim, here with my co-host.
Mr. Corey.
We are here with two very special guests. We have Zach Goggins and Drew Gerber.
Yeah.
They're local real estate icons, we're going to call them. Or tycoons. I like tycoons better, actually, too.
I was going to say mogul because that always
mogul,
sounds...
Mogul, yeah.
Mogul sounds like one of those that walks around with, like, a white fancy sport coat and, like, a ring.
And, like, yells at the camera on, like, Facebook videos trying to get you to, like, give them their life savings.
Exactly. Yeah, that's us.
For sure. I like that better, too. All right. We're going to start out every episode like we always do. We're going to try some beard oil. What do you guys want to try?
Dude, I heard about this Ponderosa stuff.
Oh, the vanilla and pine?
Yes.
I know he's going to be all over
it. Oh, I love it.
All right.
I love it.
Oh, she's sweating. I'll pass it around.
Oh, I'll get some on me. And since
I'm already loaded up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Zach's going to use a mustache. Okay, so let me explain to you how to use that. Just push up just like chapstick.
So just to preface this as well, this is a special moment because this is the first time I've ever grown out any sort of facial hair.
And it's sick.
That has been... It's definitely not still of any significance, but this is by far the first time I've ever had a mustache that can actually kind of curl.
Dude, I mean, mine can't even curl, so
you're better than mine. I've been sitting there, like, twisting it all day.
Oh, yeah. You're going to even more now.
Okay, so what am I doing here?
So just run it up a little bit. Okay, you got a little bit of height. Now just put it right, and you can use your finger to straighten it out because it solidified a little weird. Okay. And it'll get really soft. And then just put it right onto your mustache like you would apply chapstick.
Okay.
And you don't have to be super, like, abrasive with it, but just put it right onto your stash like you would chapstick on your lips. And
dude, I love that Ponderosa. You know what's the weirdest thing in the world? And I think I told you this, actually, when we met up for the first time. I've been using your product for a couple years, and I had no idea.
Small world.
I thought this stuff was made in Miles City for some reason.
No, there was another beard company around for a while. It might even still be.
I definitely have your stuff, and I definitely have Wild Yukon. I definitely do. It's so good.
You probably do, dude.
I feel like I'm giving birth right now.
No. Okay, so now you can if you like look into the camera, you can see you have like grains of wax.
So
just take your fingers and go like this.
Work it in.
There you go. Now just work it in.
Johnny Depp that stuff.
And then use your fingers to style it.
Yeah. I like that. Johnny Depp it.
Johnny Depp it. Johnny yeah. Well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes
that's perfect.
Captain Jack.
It's made so you don't see the wax.
Trademark.
Is it taking shape?
It's starting to. You just got to work it in.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're...
Just keep going like this so you can get the wax from things.
Do I have enough in it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you've honestly got too much.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, okay. So yeah, I need to go a little lighter there.
It goes... Oh, yeah. That looks so good.
It looks... It's looking...
Anybody have their phone second
shot? Yes, I do. Dude, check this out.
Oh, shit.
All right, now...
I fucking love when, like, a good mustache curl.
I know.
Look at this. Dude, that's Jesus.
Oh, shit. That looks so good.
It's so bad, dude.
I don't know if you guys. I'm gonna send that, and you guys can.
Oh yeah, for sure. That looks so rad. That looks so rad.
I love it.
That's a front. That's a single right there, dude.
That's my next cover art.
That's a cover art right there.
I'm honored.
That's insane.
Thank you, Sensei. Yeah. So, dude, it'll last you forever. You know.
Yeah. If that's all it takes, shit, I could get through.
Well, and the best part is you used it cold, so when you carry it around in your pocket, it gets warm, and the wax is actually a little softer, and so it'll just glide right on there, kind of like chapstick will.
So I should, like, sleep with it in my pocket.
Yeah.
So it's ready for you in the morning.
Keep it in your armpit, hide it in an orifice, whichever.
It'll build up over time on this kid, though. He won't have to use it that often.
No.
It'll just become a residue.
It'll just build up.
Because he doesn't shower.
Yeah, I got it. All right.
I dig that. I dig that.
I don't know if we're allowed to. Should we have that bleeped out?
No, I don't care at all.
It's fine. All right. No, this shame. Is what I have to deal with for marketing. It's
oh,
hard.
That's
hard
right. Is he your boss then?
Kind of.
Nah.
He, we,
it's more of a partnership.
Yeah. It's more of like,
okay.
Zach definitely pioneered the rose thorn.
Okay, so yeah, let's get right into it. What is your company?
Yeah, Rose Thorn Real Estate is our company.
Okay.
We're a real estate brokerage in Billings, Montana, doing Billings and surrounding areas.
Okay, so you have a license to do all of Montana.
All of Montana, okay. Yeah. So for the right thing, we'll drive 5 hours to Missoula or something.
Yeah,
right,
for, right, sure. For sure. I hear that.
You know,
5 hours? Maybe.
More than not five figures. Unless you're talking about the commission.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a pretty nice commission. Right?
Depends on the more that goes into it than you think. Yeah.
For real. So explain some of the process. I'm just gonna especially for our listeners, like most people just think like, oh, I'm gonna buy a house, I'm just gonna use the realtor that's selling it. And I got a realtor off Facebook. Poof, give me a house. I don't care what your fucking fees are. As a realtor, right, what kind of goes into selling, or okay, let's go buying and then selling, right? What goes into finding a house for your client? So your client is the buyer.
Yeah. So a buyer's agent, essentially the buyer never sees the hard costs of their realtor out of their pocket, but make no mistake, it is built into the price of the house.
Sure.
Nine times out of 10, and this is speaking very generally, but 99% of the time, a house will be listed at 6% commission, and then that 6% is split 50-50 between whichever agent finds the buyer and the agent who's listing it.
Okay.
If someone goes, so someone going with the listing agent, the agent who has it for sale, you're really just making them more money and not getting quote unquote true representation, because that agent has to try to advocate for both sides.
Okay.
It's not that it's a bad thing.
It
totally works out. We've done it before. It's not a bad thing. There's not really a benefit to the buyer with that though. So yeah, the buyer never really pays their realtor unless it's a situation where it's a for sale by owner and there's no commission built in and they have to like unique circumstances.
Sure.
Yeah. Right.
Sure. I get what you're saying is like, I always heard, oh, you know, the seller always pays the realtor fees, blah, blah, blah.
It's true.
That's like super layman's terms, you know?
It's kind of true, but they also like, is it to say that housing is priced higher to account for commissions paid? Maybe. It's hard to say. I mean, theoretically, yeah.
Sure.
But
it's kind of with anything though. I mean, whenever anything's being auctioneered off,
mm-hmm.
You know, in an open market situation, the commissions are already built into the price for the people that are actually making that transaction occur. Whether you're buying stock, whether you're buying livestock, whether you're buying cars that are at a car show, I mean, or at a car auction, it's always going to be built into the price. So it just, I think real estate gets more in the limelight because it's so much and it's such a personal transaction.
Well, that is the other thing that makes it so different is, like with an auction or things like that, there's a commission, but you're not getting so much of an in-depth personal service, like you said.
Yeah. For months on end.
Yeah. Sometimes. Like, man, you buy a $300,000 house, or let's call it, because it's so damn common anymore, let's call it a $500,000
Yeah.
Do you buy a $500,000 house with a realtor? That realtor's making $15,000 most likely before all of their splits. After their splits, call it 10, 12.
But you know, that's on your guys' end. For me, it's like, well, shit. They sold one of those a month.
Oh, it's insane.
That's $100,000 a year before taxes, of course.
But. That's the thing is, it's so much money, and it's kind of an odd thing that, like, as a buyer, you're coming in and buying a house and basically handing a $15,000 bill to the seller for the agent that you use to represent you. So it's kind of
that's crazy.
It's something that's just been the way that it is for so long, and it is going to shift.
Oh, yeah.
And it already is starting to shift, even that, like, 6% number. Like, there's tons of just, like, flat rate stuff out there.
He did do this, so we don't get
the air quotes.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So,
there's a whole thing.
We're not supposed to, like, because,
it's price fixing. It's called, what do they call it, trust. What's it called? Not trust issues, but
it's basically that.
It's trust issues.
Yeah, it's probably trust issues.
No, it's a monopolizing of the market.
Okay, so
you can actually get called out.
And, oh, shit.
And yeah.
Statute of fraud stuff.
I know.
Fucking demons of the real estate world.
Damn, so that, there's like an actual like...
Oh, yeah. Like, you're not allowed to...
It's a fucking rule. Things.
Because three brokerages in one town, in many towns, own a majority of 80% of the market. Right. And they can just say everything that walks in these doors...
1,000%, yeah.
For everybody is 8%. And it could be, you know, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, and what's so interesting is it's like an entire industry that up until probably 3 years ago had been... almost entirely price fixed.
Yeah.
Just unspoken.
Yeah, it kind of had been. The scary thing is now is that there are these tech companies moving in like Zillow, and they're just willing to just buy your house outright. They just came out with a program like this.
Dang. Yeah, I did see that shit.
They'll just buy it outright, and they can save so much money on that commission that they will just turn it around and flip it, even if it's 2%, if you do enough of them a year.
That's true, yeah.
You know, that's why Redfin, these other discount brokers are like, we're not going to act like they don't exist. They're definitely taking chunks out of the market. There's these tech companies that like, hey, sell through us. We'll do everything. We have one licensed agent in that state, so we legally can operate. We just have software to sell there. So that's what's actually how these places work. Now, the thing that we always got to fight with and contend with is, like, how personal of a service are you actually getting?
Yeah, for sure.
How do you get that? Like, do you have somebody that's waiting on you hand and foot, calling up moving companies, doing all this other stuff to make sure that your move. You know,
especially if you're moving from state to state, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit
or
sketch.
Even within town, like you got like an elderly client, like someone in their 90s that has to call three moving companies to coordinate
or,
just that and other. And
or someone who doesn't know jack shit about the structural integrity of a home.
Yeah.
I see so many people, especially like young home buyers, who don't know, you know, about north and south versus east and west cracks and foundations.
Yeah.
And they don't fucking know about what deferred maintenance even looks like on a property. Yeah. It blows my mind some of the shit that these fucking people buy. Like, yeah, I bought my first house. It's like, you know, hey, congratulations, but it's a fucking dump.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and in this market right now, man, like in this last
year. It is a seller's market. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's everywhere.
1,000%. Oh, yeah. It's not just here.
Yeah. Yeah.
COVID really fucking.
It delayed a lot, and then all of a sudden, to kickstart the economy, there's so much free money.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone was really scared.
Oh, fuck,
They didn't want to buy anything. Nobody wanted to move. Everyone's like, hunker down.
Yeah.
Well, it was 2 weeks to stop the spread. That was the first thing, and then it turned into a month. It's like, fuck, man. And then it was, we're getting out of California, and then everyone fucking came up here.
Oh, fuck. I mean, so there was a house right across the street from me. They listed it. It was $260,000. It went for $295,000.
Probably in a week.
And sight fucking unseen.
Oh, yeah, dude. 1,000%.
Dude did a walkthrough tour on video and was like, buy it. I was like,
dude, these people are just going to live here. As soon as the shit calms down, they're just going to move back anyway.
Yeah. Well, I hope.
It's possible.
We hope.
So I got a question about, let's just say that, you know, 6% of these fees.
Yeah, quote, 6%.
So
that
the fucking McMansion up in the... goddamn Ironwood, right?
One that we have listed? Or?
No.
The castle that
sold. The giant castle. The guy who abducted himself.
Yeah. $1 million or whatever they wanted for it.
He owned the mine, Signal Peak.
Yep.
You know, he faked his abduction, all that shit. We have a super crazy story about this house in our town, you guys.
Yeah.
This guy built this house to exact specs that his wife wanted that matches their house in Georgia or some shit.
Yep.
Like to the fucking square inch. Had bowling alleys and swimming pools. Did you ever tour it?
Shooting range. I never saw it in person.
Oh, motherfucker. I should have. Anyway, this thing is fucking ridiculous. And it ended up being fraud. And he owed like creditors like $16
million. Yeah.
Well, it just sold this last year to the people who owned a trailer park. I think we decided for like $7.5 or $8 million.
Yeah.
They bought it.
I think they bought it for $8 million.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously there's a huge loss to the creditors and the construction companies who did all that work. But does the realtor still get their fees?
The realtor got paid.
Yeah, the realtor. What the fuck is 6% on $8 million?
Well, and we might not necessarily be able to disclose what those commissions were.
Okay.
We could look and find out, but I don't think we can publicly say what they are. But go ahead and do the math, assuming one thing or another, and any which way, like
just say 10% would be $800,000. So just even if you got 5%, that's $400,000.
Oh, it would.
Granted, this house, mind you, this house sat here for years.
Yeah.
So they might have done a shit ton of legwork, but still, the realtor, they got fucking paid. Like, fucking paid, bro.
Dude.
It's pretty crazy.
You get into stuff like that, man, like, and you think about the people who do, like, four or five of those a year out in like, Beverly Hills or...
Well, dude, there's literally, like, you know, obviously there's multimillionaire realtors, of course. Oh,
yeah. Dude, that shit's out there, man. Yeah. It's fucking wild. Nuts. That shit is wild.
You know,
I'd be the type that I'd make like enough that I'd become a millionaire. I'd be like, I'm fucking done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, but a million ain't shit.
And they go sell horses.
Oh yeah, how to do it?
It's
sell horses.
That's actually true.
Courses. Oh, okay.
That's why, dude. Anybody who ever drop shipped, anybody who did e-commerce and got successful at all, they stopped that ship because drop shipping comes along so fast. I don't know if you know what drop shipping is.
I don't, but it sounds fun.
So drop shipping is what you see, like these super uber popular products for like a month on end. The fidget spinner.
Yeah.
Lots of those people did drop shippers. So you go onto a website like Alibaba or AliExpress. And you just link that to a website you build that's just one page of fucking fidget spinner, or it's just a funnel. People buy it. You don't even hold the product. It ships from fucking China straight to the people. That's drop shipping.
Yep.
Those guys are making fucking hundreds of millions of dollars doing that shit over the last couple of years.
Drop shipping is fucking middleman?
Yeah, drop shipping. Well, they've had to fork over money for ads, but they've And you got to find winning products like ahead of the game. Regardless, now these guys just sell courses on how to drop ship. You know, $10 and they get fucking 10,000 downloads a month on this course.
You probably know this, Tim, but this last year, man, because of the way that Chinese New Year fell, then the COVID and everything, it shut down manufacturing like crazy. So drop shipping in this country with outside manufacturers got destroyed. It was one of the hardest years. And I watch a ton of YouTube. And I was on YouTube and I was watching quite a few of these guys that sell courses. Typically what they do is they do these little challenges, build up these audiences on YouTube, get to 800,000, a million, or whatever. And man, if just 10,000 people buy their $300 course, it's $300,000.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, more than $3 million. $3 million.
Yeah,
I missed that.
Holy shit.
Late at night here, folks.
$3 million.
But yeah, $3 million.
And
that's crazy.
And it's kind of sad because there are a lot of good courses. I've bought several good courses, but there's so many fake gurus out there who sell shit courses.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I would be one of those that would be like, what can I fake?
How to make your wiener bigger? Yeah. All those courses are fucking fake.
Yeah. There's quite a few.
So the ones that you already bought, I mean, you might as well take them now.
Well, I mean, I never got them, but I paid for them, so.
Never delivered.
I'm waiting on them still.
Oh, we're always waiting.
I blame COVID.
Probably. But no, the boxes, my premium sampler boxes came from China.
Yep.
And luckily, I had placed the order before COVID hit. And so those ones actually came over on one of the boats before that boat that got stuck in the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Those poor fucking bastards. If you had product on that, like, they just counted it a total loss.
Oh, yeah.
The motherfucker was stuck in there sideways for like 6 months.
What do you think happened?
They fucking stuck it in there on purpose, obviously.
You think so?
Yes. 1,000%.
I would think that'd be
like they
who screw up.
Who is they?
So to me,
anyone that wants to disrupt the supply line and get supply from somewhere else.
Exactly. And I've never dug if a different part of the world got a massive influx of, you know, outside orders, but
right.
You don't put that thing in there sideways on accident.
I don't know how you could. Fuck no.
And if you look at it, that's a big ass ship.
And
the banks of that canal are so shallow, but they fucking drifted that motherfucker in there. I mean,
does anyone
has there been a logical
physical explanation?
No. And the captain was like super, super experienced too.
Yeah.
And nobody ever.
And I love that he was just like, sorry.
All they did was they brought in little fucking mini toy excavators because they're so small. They dug at it for like 6 months.
Yeah.
Why not hook up tugboats on either end and go?
You would think big tugboats.
The ship is fucking sideways in the canal like this. Hook up a tugboat this way and hook up one that way and just pull
turn
it.
Turn it.
Why the fuck? Why didn't they do that?
Yeah.
Now I'm not a fucking engineer, so I don't know what was underneath if the rudders were in fucking 50 feet of mud, but it. From me, an asshole's point of view, and watching fucking TV, you know, I was like, I could have done that shit. You know, it's one of those deals. Like, why the fuck?
Armchair.
Yeah.
Pilots or something.
I don't know. Kind of like a backseat driver type deal, right?
Armchair pilots. That's good, actually.
No, there was something. It's like armchair professionals or something. There's some kind of a saying.
Armchair hero. Anyway, okay. So you have an interesting story, though, right? So tell us what you did before Rose Thorn.
Give us a synopsis, dude. Man. This is wild.
You have a fucking interesting life, dude.
There's a lot of backstory, man.
Well, we're going to go through it, but let's go, like, Okay, so you were in a band. Like, dude, let's talk about that band and its commercial success, etc.
Even before the band, where do you start out?
Okay.
That's an interesting thing for you to go from there, especially for the people here in, like, Billings, Montana. Fuck yeah. Wondering, like, what did this kid do? How did this kid get?
Dude, you would not believe the amount of people that don't know about your family's ties to livestock.
Either. Yeah.
That's totally true. Yeah, well, there's kind of like two groups, right? Because there was pretty much everyone that worked with my grandfather.
Yeah.
And then there's like everyone else that
isn't
part of that world, you know?
So tell us about the Goggins name. Like, what did your parents...
Yeah, so my grandfather came to Montana from California pretty much as a toddler. And his parents came from Ireland.
Way back. Give us a year, like a year that he came.
I don't know. I really don't know.
I think it was in the 40s.
Probably 40s. No, it'd be before that, man. Because my dad was born in 60. So it might have been around then. Yeah, probably in the 40s.
Yep.
With nothing. Came to Montana with absolutely nothing. Dirt poor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was one of seven boys in the family. And man, long story short, out of nothing, built an empire of like five ranches, two stockyards, a real estate company, real estate portfolio, just wild, unheard of.
Stockyards.
American fucking dream right there.
Are we talking like Pays?
Yeah, Pays and BLS were both my grandfather's.
Your grandfather owns, does your family still own Pays?
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous. Like your parents or your uncles or something?
No, so that's a whole nother story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's probably something I can't really go
sure. on no, about. Sure, no, that's
fine. But, yeah. So, and then also the Western Ag Reporter, which is like an agricultural
the magazine.
Okay. Yeah, that's what my dad runs.
Oh shit! Mainly.
That's like his primary thing.
Is he the guy on the news spot then?
He's on the column. Yeah, he's on the front. Okay. Yeah. Ooh, so he writes a column in there and like runs the whole ship and like.
Oh,
yeah. Zach actually had a couple articles in that.
Yeah, I used to write in it all the time, just like miscellaneous stuff that wasn't.
You need to get an article published in there about beard oil. Damn it.
Yeah, you could.
That'd be kind of sweet.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Totally.
Okay.
So that's my background. I grew up a mile away from my grandma's, which is on the ranch. Was not like super interested in it as a kid.
Okay.
Which was
so you're not interested in like running a stockyard
or I never was. I was like the long haired skateboarder kid that was like 80 pounds that did not fit in at all with my. Any of my cousins, anything.
Okay,
my sister
so,
was the same way.
So just but. For us super inquisitive, I guess like curious type.
Yeah.
Without like divulging like actual numbers, like what kind of revenue comes through a stockyard in Montana?
Dude, I honestly don't even know.
You don't even know?
I don't even know.
Damn.
It's there's so much that's so spread out. I don't see any of those numbers.
Sure,
I don't
of course.
Anything like that. Yeah, I really don't know.
Aside from your family being well off, you know, never struggling, right?
Oh, dude, I grew up fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I grew up, like, I wasn't, like, super, super, it wasn't like I could have everything I want.
Yeah.
But, like, I never needed anything at all. Like, that's cool. My parents always, here's the thing about my childhood. It wasn't amazing. It was good because of how I never really needed anything.
Uh-huh.
But it was amazing. Because of how like supportive my parents were of
sure.
the stuff I wanted to do.
Yeah. So
you
that's
know, like
yeah, for sure I've always noticed
especially
that.
Especially like living out like somewhere near a ranch, you feel like we want you to be here working with like the ranch and stuff. We would you wouldn't want them like
totally
off doing whatever they want sort of a thing. So that's I mean movies don't really show that either where they're supportive. They're like, "Damn it, you could be here working the farm."
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's one thing.
A lot of Montana families are like that.
Oh yeah.
Man, a lot. Yeah.
Dude, I feel like I got planted in a spot that I was very lucky to be because there was never a time where I felt like bad or I was made to feel bad about wanting to do my own thing.
Right.
At all. Like it was super encouraged.
Fucking A.
So yeah, man, that was good and I got super into skateboarding and like ended up just starting to play drums. That was a whole nother story how that got started. But, man, that just took over my whole life when I picked up drums.
Oh, ditto. I got my first drum set when I was like 11 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
That was exactly when I got mine.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old in sixth grade.
Mine was a shitty off-brand thing we bought from China. Verve.
Nice.
So
I remember
sweet.
Those, dude. I used to see those all the time. That's awesome.
But yeah. Okay, so drums, like, took over your life?
Oh, dude, I was, like, 8 to 10 hours a day.
Dang.
Just, like, all I did. And I was a super shy kid, too. Like, I didn't know how to connect with people at all. Like, I was just kind of awkward around people. And I was kind of insecure because I was way smaller than anyone in my class because I was a year behind. And I'm just a small dude in general. And
you, like, are a gangly creature.
Super gangly.
Right?
Yeah. And I was super short at the time, too.
Oh, shit.
And Shepherd being so, like, sports-based.
Oh, well, yeah. Like, if you're, yeah, they're, you the know, herders, right?
Yeah, you're,
if,
like,
you're not a fucking football player or a dude, basketball player, they're like,
you got these corn-fed fuckers.
The fuck yeah, these big, thick motherfuckers, and they got facial hair.
And I was corn-fed, too, but I didn't get any of that shit.
Yeah, I hear that.
I do have to say, like, going up against country boys in a fight most times, it's fucking terrifying. Because yeah, those dudes are always...
Dude, country boys...
Just fucking...
Dude, country, like, boys are scary. The backbone of this fucking nation. Like, I bet you if they did some statistical analyzing of the amount of country boys that enlisted in the military...
Oh, yeah.
You'd fucking shit your pants.
Oh, yeah.
Look, oh, I wouldn't. Look at Chris Kyle. That motherfucker was riding goddamn bareback horses, and 9/11 happened, and he watched it, and he was just like, fuck yeah. And goes out there and... Fuck yeah, yeah, man. There ain't nothing to fuck around with. Dude, country boys in fucking Copenhagen. Man.
Country boys in Copenhagen? That sounds like a new country album.
He must work out. Okay, so where did drums take you?
Yeah, so... Long story short, ended up playing drums for a band called Righteous Vendetta. Joined that when I was 17 and went on the road for like 300 days a year for the first 3 years.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's called earning it.
It's called the dream.
So this band, which I know about this band because I sponsored this band with products 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. Not you so much because you didn't really have facial hair, but Ryan and the other dudes, of course.
Yeah.
So... In terms of, like, you guys are signed to a record deal.
We did.
Or were you independent? Okay.
Yeah, so the first 2 or 3 years that I was in the band, we played 250 to 300 shows per year. So that equates to being gone for about 9 to 10 months a year. It was insane.
So let's talk two things I want to talk about, just because most people don't know, and even I don't know. What goes into a record deal? What kind of money are we talking about for a record deal of a band on that level? Dude, and then what kind of money is there playing 300 shows a fucking year?
Okay, to answer them separately. So the money in the record deal. So after that first 3 years I was in, I think it's around that time, we got scouted by Sony, or Century Media, which is owned by Sony.
Sure.
And we signed a deal with them, and it was like... It's like $150,000 budget for the first record, and there was like $25,000 advance to start the record, and man, that's nothing.
You guys have to split that five ways?
Well, that's not even like money in your pocket. That's just money to spend
to pay the producer
the record.
Oh, just, shit.
Yeah, to like make it.
Put promotion. And dude, $150,000 is
ain't
like,
shit.
It's not shit, dude. Like, the record itself, Sony spent... like $60,000 on just finishing the product.
Wow.
And it was, they put some like flaccid ass radio budget into one of the songs that we hated that they made us write with someone else, and it fucking flopped. And then the song that they told us, literally, we still have the email. They told us that this is the worst song we have heard in our entire lives.
Oh my God.
Like our A&R guy emailed us that. And then that was
fucking.
And then that's the song that organically has like what 6 million streams on Spotify now.
Fuck.
Like, that the one you guys filmed inside that prison?
Yeah.
That song is so fucking dope. God damn.
Thanks, man.
That song.
It's pissed, man. It's heavy.
I fucking love that song.
But yeah, that's like in rock. That's like record deal money, and rock is just so it's dude. There's no money in it. There's really not. Like
the money's in the touring, right?
It is. That's
and the merch.
That's exactly why. Is, man, when you're a rock or a metal band, you're a glorified t-shirt salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
It's really what it is, because...
I grew up going to metal shows, and to be honest, the merch booths are always fucking busy.
Yeah.
Because you have like a cult following for bands, right?
Yep.
Like, Killswitch is one of my favorite bands ever, and I just... They've made a lot of fucking money selling records, I will say that, but the amount of t-shirts you fucking see at a show... Yeah. Just for one band is kind of nuts.
Dude, it's if you're big enough to have like a decent guarantee when you play, it, like if you can make that like 5,000 a night thing work and you're not driving a fucking bus, like if you can make it work with some vans and you're just doing hotels, dude, you're making money at that.
Okay.
And then on top of your merch, like you could be pulling $8,000 a night and then you're splitting it like say with Righteous Vendetta, if we were at that point, Ryan and I are the only lasting members,
yeah,
official members. Like anyone else that plays with us is just hired on. So we'd probably pay like two guys $200 a day each and then be splitting
$8,000
a night, which would be awesome. We're not there at all.
Okay.
Which leads me into the answer to your other question.
Sure.
How much money is there?
Sure.
I didn't make any fucking money touring.
Oh, okay.
All no, right. Dude, it was like...
It's like $1 a day. I remember you telling me something about $1 a day.
Dude, I was living on $5 a day for years.
Yeah.
And that's like sticks, heads, food, fucking everything.
Were you sponsored by any symbol companies or head companies?
I'm endorsed with Zildjian and Big Birth.
Okay.
So I get half off, which is super helpful.
Hey, yeah, dude. Yeah. Zildjian's expensive as fuck, symbols.
Yeah, and they've kicked me a couple things for free, which has been awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like, we were touring with 1,000 Foot Crutch, Nonpoint, Hurt, 10 Years.
Yeah, I got hooked up with 10 Years, too. They're good dudes back in the...
Oh, nice.
Back in the day.
Yeah, man, they were cool. We didn't really get to meet them when we were out with them, but, like, pretty sizable bands, and, like, dude, you make $250, $300, maybe $500 a night as a band, and then by the time you're paying, like...
You guys weren't openers, but you were never the headliner? Like, were you guys, like, middle of the road?
It varied. It just depends on the tour. Like, on Hell Yeah, when we toured with Hell Yeah, we were the opening band out of three
total. Okay.
So it's, like, it was us and then, like, Texas Hippie Coalition, I think.
So, this is going to be just a wild guess for you, but say for the people here in Billings especially, when someone headlines the Metra, so we get fucking shitty-ass Five Finger Death Punch, well, we used to before COVID. We used to get their fucking garbage all the time. Shinedown fucking comes here all the time. They play the same goddamn songs.
Yeah.
What kind of guarantee does a band like that require from a venue like the Metro, which is considered an arena with a capacity of like 10 to 11,000?
So the way those shows are structured is there's usually a promotion company that rents the Metro and then pays the bands and takes the ticket sales.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so usually when Five Finger plays, I think it's, I don't know, is it Live Nation that does it? So probably some company out of Spokane, for example. That pays their guarantee and books the Metro and pays the promo. Five Finger, man, I bet they're 30, 50.
Yeah. At one point I heard through the grapevine, I can't remember who I heard it from, and it wasn't someone who was a total idiot, but I heard that they would charge the openers to play on their tours. Is that true? Like,
bands
have to pay to...
And we've never played that game.
Okay.
Righteous Vendetta hasn't.
But so it does exist.
There's tons of like Daddy's Money LA bands that go and pay $60,000 to go open for Black Veil Brides for like 2 months.
Holy shit.
And it's like, dude, that's huge.
So that's why you get bands that you're like, fuck are you? I have never heard your music.
Essentially, it's like marketing, right? Yep. Like, hey, we're Black Veil Brides. We're going to put you in front of 3 million people over the course of the next 6 months.
Yeah.
Give us $60,000 and...
And dude, there's a certain amount where it could work. Like if it was, I mean, if it's the right deal, maybe, but that's a lot to fork out for. Yeah, dude, it'd be hard to make that work.
Yeah, that's,
but they're out there. We've toured with, we've been around all that shit, man. Tons of those bands that just come and go. Chevelle was actually one of those that made it. Chevelle was like...
Wasn't there a fucking news article just a couple months ago that said Chevelle is broke and that they claimed that they never made money off of their records or some shit? Who was that?
I never heard anything about that. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. They probably signed a deal. I mean, I know
like they signed some six-album deal and it just ripped them off or some crap. God damn it. Who the fuck? I thought it was Chevelle.
Dude, labels right now?
Yeah. Every single horror story you hear about labels is all true and there's no way around it.
No.
I had that happen to me when we were in a band.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we weren't anything huge. We did play, like, one show in Missoula, and we played a couple shows here and around the state. But, like, we had this dude that was like, yeah, I can get you this. I can do this. And we're like, all right, cool. We never paid anything to the guy, but, like, he let us on for a good, like, 6 months being like, yeah, we're going to get you this. And I'm like, okay, cool. You going to get us that show? Nope. We got one show out of him. And the dude that we played with, it was so good.
Fucking Elks Lodge.
Basically, dude, it was at some patio bar. And we're like, all right, dude, whatever. It was a fundraiser. We're good with it. It was a fundraiser for this little kid with cancer. I was like, we'll do it.
Yeah.
The person who opened for us walks on stage with a fucking Bluetooth in his ear. Like,
hey, Billy, I'll have to call you back.
Yeah, no shit. Like, playing just himself. What? No other, like, people behind him. Just him and a guitar.
Was it an acoustic set?
Yeah, it wasn't acoustic. He was... trying to be, like...
John Mayer.
And not John Mayer. I mean, it was kind of rock-ish. Like, I say rock-ish because, again, it was one fucking dude.
No trouble sharing?
And
he's just on the right side.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, we know that.
I only come out of the right side.
Yeah. I think it's my wiring.
I didn't know. I was just double checking. I was like,
it records fine, but on the headphones, it's an issue. So I don't know if the Chinese splitter I bought. Regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not the weirdest show, because the weirdest show, I had a dog piss on my amp.
Yeah.
That was a fundraiser too. That one was actually we did a anti-meth show. It was like a basically on the reservation, and they're like, hey, we want to pay you for this. We did get paid like $500 for it. Yeah. But out of it, I mean, that trip by itself, like, our lead guitarist was an alcoholic at the time, and he got shithoused and ended up wandering off before we went on stage, like following some dude to get lasagna.
That'll happen.
They set up our merch booth right next to their like free booth of like merch. So we're having people walk over and like, oh, cool, grabbing our shit. And I'm like, please, no, that's like a $20 shirt. Don't. Like, you're not going to grab that.
That's what people do with my stuff at the fucking Home Improvement show.
They're telling us about that.
Motherfuckers.
They were just grabbing your bottles.
So, not to cut you off
at all. Oh, no, you're good.
My mustache wax, I used to set them in trays on the table. And at the Home Improvement shows, you get a bag when you walk in, and people walk around, and the trick-or-treaters and just fucking...
Yeah, just grab
shit. People thought it was chapstick, and they'd be like, five. Be like, no, those are 10 bucks a piece. It's fucking mustache wax, you dumb bitch. Like, bring it back. But it's hard when it's a little kid, and the mom's like, okay, Billy, go grab that. And you're like, fuck, the kid's poor. I guess you can have mustache wax, kid.
How do you grow into it?
Whether their parents ever find out, I don't... But it was like, goddamn it, so I had to fucking take the shit off the table. I'm going to revamp my display for the shows anyway, but dude, I'm so jealous of you guys. Like, so I grew up playing drums. Like, I really got heavy when School of Rock came out. That came out in fucking 2003. Who didn't want to fucking play drums? So I got a drum set for Christmas. Got really, really good at drums, but nobody in my school ever wanted to be in a band. Fucking broke my heart.
See, mine was after
I just high wanted school, to play shows.
I did join a little band when we were in like high school senior year, because we were going to play Avenged Sevenfold for like the senior talent thing.
Oh, fuck, nice.
And then everyone just kind of like, eh, fuck this.
I know. Well, kids are unreliable.
Oh, dude, we were.
You hear those stories about a group of high school friends grew up playing music and they make it? Like,
it rarely happens.
Reliability.
Jonas Brothers. That's kind of a built-in.
Hanson.
They fucking went from, dude, the Jonas Brothers are an interesting story. They went from like super church group.
Yeah.
You know, like, the parents, like...
They used to, like, sell purity rings and shit.
Yep, you're used to... Wait, didn't you ever see the South Park episode?
Yeah.
With Mickey Mouse?
Uh-uh.
dude, like, they fucking... They did the church group singing, and then they molded into... What are the Jonas Brothers now?
Well, I mean, look at the Hansons. Look at the Hanson brothers.
Yeah, but they were like...
So they were
Jonas Brothers have tons of hits.
But they were super poppy. Listen to them now. They are super jazzy, and they are fucking great.
Just don't dare compare.
Jonas Brothers and Hanson?
Yeah. Don't fucking even try.
There's probably like some fans out there listening to this and like, who the fuck are the Hansons?
That's where I'm at right now. I have no idea who that is.
Hanson. They sing bop,
dip a dip,
bop, boom, bop,
dip a dip, bop.
Really? That stupid ass bop song?
Is this something from like Pitch Perfect or something?
No, this is like the 90s.
This is a massive song.
How did I miss that? Like, right now I'm like, bop, that makes sense. I've heard that
before. All I know is if you're going to ask me, like, do I want the Jonas Brothers publishing or do I want Hanson's publishing, I'm going to choose Jonas Brothers.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Well, there's going to be people, too, that are like, oh, we're Jonas Brothers fans. Oh.
And to go back to that, like, what Zach said is like, rock really isn't. I mean, there's mainstream rock, but rock is not people's choice of music anymore.
No. I agree. I don't think there's rock.
This is not the fucking. Well, there's rock, but I'm saying it's not what the people choose. This isn't the 80s. Look at how big fucking Motley Crue.
Glam metal.
Yeah.
Hair metal was fucking nuts. The hottest chicks listened to fucking metal, and you fucking had sex and did all this crazy shit to rock and roll. Now, you listen to it's fucking rap music or pop. It's mostly pop.
Well, and it's shifted in a weird way, like with Machine Gun Kelly. Like, bringing that, like, all
he's so odd what he you know, because, I mean, his stuff isn't bad now, but I did like how he became known for his rapping style.
Totally.
You know, and, but his punk stuff isn't horrible either, you know, because he's collabing with Travis Barker a shit ton.
Yeah.
His punk stuff doesn't sound bad, but I just, it's a very commercially.
Well, and dude, I don't even blame the consumers for like rock dying the way it kind of did.
No.
I blame the labels and the artists themselves, man. Like,
they milked it too hard.
Well, they tried to do the same shit for too long.
Yeah.
Dude, Breaking Benjamin and Nickelback and all that shit happened.
Yep.
And it's never gonna happen again. That style.
Dude,
if you look at the last 10 years of like rock radio, it's all people trying to live in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And it just killed the fucking genre. Like, people are making drums and guitars cool again because people like Machine Gun Kelly, who are like actually cool, and doing something new.
Like, these younger kids are like, he's got a fucking electric guitar.
Yeah. Electric guitar sales fucking rise.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, it's kind of like, have you guys ever heard of Bionic Jive?
No.
Bionic Jive does a very metal.
Jive or drive?
Jive.
Oh, Jive.
Jive. J-I-V.
You're saying Pam or Panned?
Pammed.
Okay, there's a D on the end. All right.
But so Bionic Jive is like hard metal.
Sure.
But it's rap.
Yeah. All right.
So it's it kind of, at first it was like, oh, it's kind of like Limp Bizkit. Not like.
Limp Bizkit's getting big too.
Dude, they did put out a new Dad Vibes.
Fuck yeah.
That was.
People were making fun of him. He went to Lollapalooza or whatever and just fucking blew their minds.
Dressed up as the old dad dude.
He grew his fucking gray hair and he wore fucking Reebok like, Airs or whatever the fuck
he went. Crocs or New Balance.
New Balance. I haven't seen any of that. People didn't catch up on that.
You didn't see Fred Durst? Oh man. He fucking blew up the internet for a couple days.
Really?
Shit. Well, he was on TikTok, and when he showed up on TikTok the first time, I was like, kind of looks like Fred Durst.
Oh,
and
he's old.
Right, and I mean, he got old, but I was like, hold on, let me look at him again, and I was like, holy fuck, Fred Durst got old. I mean, it makes sense, but
it's
he
like had, the remix, man. Like, people are coming back for the remix on TikTok. Like, many bigger names are coming back
on TikTok, I am definitely a... I grew up in the 90s, and so boy bands, still, I'm like, they were good at they did.
NSYNC. Oh, yeah.
And they are now doing things, like, together again, and I'm like, fuck.
They need money. You love it, man.
And, right, exactly.
The royalty stuff.
Here, look. This is Fred,
new Fred
this
Durst.
This is Fred Durst now. This is what he did. And we're sharing with the folks watching here.
No way.
Fuck yeah, dude. He came out with this fucking... And this is how he went on their show.
That's wild.
And it, like, with that shirt and shit. Like,
yep. Looked like a fucking old man.
Dude, Break Stuff is the only song I'll karaoke.
It's a good one.
Chocolate Starfish.
Yeah, Chocolate Starfish.
Dude,
the whole fucking album, but I'll Keep Rolling. Oh my god.
Nothing.
Keep rolling, rolling, rolling.
Hot dog flavor water, man.
Dude, nothing beats that fucking riff that's just... Darn it. Darn it. Just the whole fucking
just
song,
one of
dude.
Those days where like, you don't want to wake up.
You can't beat that riff, man. No. It's two notes, and it just says fuck you the whole song.
Dude, there's one thing to say about that. You said, like, the people, like, killed it because they repeated it over and over.
Yeah.
The simplicity of, like, early 2000s rock. When you think back now, it's like, wow, that seems super simple, but the songs were really good. You know, like, Nickelback, everyone
on Nickelback.
I fucking love Nickelback, dude.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I met my wife when Nickelback was fucking huge, so I have very fond memories of Nickelback songs,
everyone
dude.
Shit on
yeah,
2008 on is just...
Chad Kroeger landed Avril. Like, he fucked her, dude. Like, we should be giving that guy a fucking high five.
Dude, Modson's dating Avril now.
I know. He's such a weird fucking looking
He's an interesting guy. Yeah.
He's, I don't really like his music either.
But dude, him and Travis Barker are the ones behind Machine Gun Kelly.
I know. I know. It's fucking nuts. He's one of those like songwriter people that nobody knows about. Kind of like fucking Benny Blanco.
Dude, he's selling shows.
Everybody
out now,
knows
too.
Him now.
Yeah, because of TikTok.
This is true. Yeah,
he's selling out shows and shit now. I know. His last two are like just totally
That's
sold
crazy.
Out.
Crazy. It's wild. Dude, like, yeah, like people just recycle and recycle and recycle same shit. Like, unpopular opinion, I fucking hate Metallica. Because their music sounds the same.
For me?
And they're fucking dicks. Lars is the biggest piece of shit.
So
you
everyone...
talk about daddy's money? You know that the whole thing was funded by him, his parents, right?
Oh, was it? I don't know.
He's an uber rich spoiled kid, and that's why he led the forefront when they sued fucking, what was that? Music?
Napster.
When they sued Napster?
Oh,
that was Lars up there saying, they're stealing our money. When he's been funded. He's never had to work a day in his fucking life. I hope he fucking
Lars is a bitch. Everyone knows Lars is a bitch.
And he plays the drums and it pissed me off because he is a good drummer. But I just, dude, I just don't like, I feel like they've been filled with so much drama over the years. I just don't like Metallica.
So since we're talking about hating.
Their music just isn't good.
Since we're talking about hating, who's your, like, favorite drummer?
Oh yeah,
please. Davey Lich.
Fucking A.
Okay,
so he's like the actual real deal guru master of like how to use your fucking body and the stuff. So I did a few private lessons with him, and dude, just I feel like anyone in any physical medium, whether it's like an instrument or a sport or whatever, dude, to sit down with Davey Lich for an hour is worth your fucking time.
Sure.
Like he boils like physicality and the instrument down to just universal principles and truths of like how to ground yourself with the earth and like get the most power out of the least effort.
Are you still playing drums?
Oh yeah.
You still practice daily or
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Real estate's busy, obviously.
But. Well, and it's being like a master drummer is something that's kind of fallen off my radar for a long time.
Sure.
Because I started getting really, really, really deep into all that and like drilling this and that and the, every day and like whatever. And I just found it's just not the path that I need to go.
Sure.
Like I don't need to be an artisan drummer. I would rather be an artist.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they're one and the same, but I've just poured more into my voice and my production skills and my writing and everything all encompassing. So I can say more than just drums.
Sure.
Not that just drums is not sufficient.
Yeah.
It's just not what I want.
Sure. Know? So, okay. So you asked the question, who's your favorite bassist?
Victor Wooten, hands down.
That's fair.
Hands down. That motherfucker can make a bass talk like I have never seen somebody like the first time I watched a video of him.
So tell people who Victor is.
Well, I mean, he's played for Dave Matthews for a while. Okay. I don't know what he does anymore, but like
I only know him from the Dave Matthews Band.
He's a very decent slap basser, I will say that. Like the dude can make sounds out of his bass that I have never heard come out of an instrument before where I'm like, what the fuck
you
are
you
doing?
You gotta fucking beat it, dude. But
dude, he's
like,
I mean, he's straight up like shit. Hands all up on the neck tapping shit. And I'm like, I don't know what you're hitting there, but you obviously know what you're hitting because
it's the bass's G-spot.
Yeah, dude, he knows what he's fucking doing with it.
Yeah.
He knows he's got those Mr. Bass fingers.
So
I'm gonna make a controversial statement.
Ooh.
All slap bass sounds like Seinfeld.
God, I fucking hate
that. I'm okay with that.
Now that you said that, God, I don't like
it.
Seinfeld,
it does,
but
it absolutely like slap bass. And it's funny because I used to make jokes when I play bass, and it was not like I cannot slap bass. Like I try, and I'm like,
Dude,
no,
I have a really great band to show you if you like slap bass.
I just said I don't.
Oh, okay, well, this band highlights the bass. Dude, this
is
band,
it like Primus? Are we going to hear some
fuck
like...
No, Primus. I love Primus, too.
And that's one of those things, as much as I don't really like listening to slap bass, there are times that I'm like, put on some Primus and
I'm just thinking of the South Park themes. But no, goddamn, what was I saying? I can't. Oh, my. I was gonna state my like unorthodox favorite drummer, Luke Holland.
See, I get that. I totally get that.
And what's crazy is he's young. Like, he's younger than I am. I found him on YouTube when he was fucking like 16, 17 years old. I turned that thing down. But dude, the fucking guy can just play. So he started covers on YouTube, right? And then he got to fill in for a band called Texas in July, which is a fucking amazing, was an amazing
metalcore band.
Metalcore band, yeah. The lead singer for that band is actually singing for a band that I sponsored. One of my favorite bands called Era. They're a fucking metalcore band too. But dude, like Luke, now he's just like a freelancer fill-in drummer. Like right now he's touring with Falling in Reverse.
Oh, nice.
So he's just hanging out with fucking Roddy Radke and Tyler and those fucking guys. Dude, he can just fucking flat out play. I met him here in Billings when he was playing with The Word Alive because they were one of the openers. Such a fucking weird show, Zach. I was actually going to tell you about this. In 2013, Killswitch Engage brought their tour here to the Babcock.
Yeah.
It was Killswitch Engage. Hold on. It was Affliction.
Amity Affliction.
No. I would love Amity Affliction. It was just a band called Affliction.
Interesting. Okay.
So it was Affliction. I'll get to Amity Affliction in a minute. So it was Affliction, The Word Alive, Darkest Hour, Miss May I, and Killswitch Engage.
Okay.
For $27 at the Babcock.
Jesus, dude.
It was the longest fucking show. Five fucking bands. And guess what? It was the first show that As I Lay Dying had to cancel because Tim Lambesis got thrown in jail for plotting to kill his wife.
Yeah, right. That's right.
The guy hired a hitman to kill his wife.
Christian metalcore band.
Because we were supposed to see As I Lay Dying, and we got the update to like, oh, hey, they got dropped off. Miss Mayer is going to fill in for him. Like, what the fuck? And it's like, yeah, the lead singer hired a hitman to kill his wife. Anyway. They're back now, though. They played some rad tunes. Anyway, dude, that show was unreal. And so we got to meet Luke Hall. I got to meet Luke Holland afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
He's just a fucking downer. He's a goddamn kid at this time. He's just like,
yeah.
Touring. Well, you were too. You're touring the fucking world. Where did you go? Anywhere out of the U.S.?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh.
They played Europe before I joined.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I've been through the 48 states.
Shit.
So all 50 except for Hawaii and Alaska.
You guys never played in Alaska or Hawaii?
No. No, we were trying to get booked in Alaska for a bit, but
somewhere you could at least drive up there, I guess, right?
Well, it's hard to get booked out there because the agents are just so few and far between.
They
gotta fly you out. You gotta find like rental equipment, all that stuff. Like nobody's driving up there.
Fuck no, that's way too long of a drive unless you have stops through Canada that you're doing.
Yeah, a couple shows.
Yeah, you can find something in Lethbridge on the way up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've played like Vancouver a few times. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, some of that.
What's the biggest show you've ever played?
Rock on the Range. It was the day that I was supposed to be back at home graduating high school when I was 17.
Fucking A.
We were in Ohio playing for 7,000 people.
Damn.
That's cool.
It's wild.
That's sweet.
That's like, nuts.
What a great day.
What kind of rush is that? Play. Okay, so I played football. Like, my junior year, we played state championship in front of 7,500 people.
Yeah.
And actually, the Senior West game had almost 8,000 people, and that wasn't even – so I've played in a game like that, but you're not the only – you're not like one of five. You're like one of 100 people, right?
Right. Yeah.
What is it like when you're on the fucking stage? And you're looking down because, dude, like drummers, like you have the best view.
That's true, especially if you've got the platform.
Exactly. So what is that like,
dude? It's hard for me to say exactly what it feels like. I know that it's not like, even though it was the biggest show, it's probably not the most like
euphoric
that I've ever had.
Sure.
And I think it's because like
orgasmic. I should have said orgasmic. Damn it.
Orgasmic. Yes, that's a good. That's a better word.
Fuck it.
I think when you get to a threshold like past 1,000 people where it's like at that point the stage is a certain size and the venue is a certain size, maybe even say past like 1,500, 2,000.
Yeah.
Where it's like it's a good experience, but it's a different one.
Sure.
Like, dude, I've had amazing, amazing experiences playing for like 100 people.
Yeah.
200 people.
Sure.
Because you're up close and it's
I've been to some really awesome concerts that were small.
Those are the like bangers in here.
Sure.
You know, it's like that's a different kind of awesome than playing to like a few thousand people who may or may not know your name, especially if you're opening.
True.
I can only imagine people like Machine Gun Kelly or like any superstar where you're playing for 10,000-15,000 people who know every word and are
or,
also like yelling it at you. That's
or being fucking I mean,
imagine
Kanye or Drake when you're in the center of the stage and there's no back to you, so they're playing in arenas with like 80,000.
You're just 360, dude. Yeah. I can't even imagine. Like,
can you? Yeah, like your microphone is like broadcasting to all of those people. That's fucking weird to me.
Like,
unfathomable to me, honestly. Like,
yeah.
So I get nervous. Like, I'm back. Now I'm like by myself, right? So the last show that I did was what the hell was it called?
Red Ants Pants,
right? So I run the beard competition on their side stage up there. So we get like a couple hundred people crowd in right away, but it's just me on the stage. So even just talking with my, like, there's some jitters to that. And you know, you're just introducing people in a beard contest, right? But
yeah.
I can't fathom fucking tens of thousands of people who know the fucking words to, like you said, your songs.
Yeah. Which, and I guess from my own experience, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of an unpredictable, like sometimes seemingly random thing where sometimes it just connects and sometimes it doesn't.
Sure.
And you kind of just have to like pretend that it does. Like, when you watch an artist, they might be having the time of their lives and completely lost in the moment and, like, in themselves and, like, what's going on.
Sure.
Or they might just be like,
this is a job. I'm here to do this. Let's.
Yeah.
It was
well,
a day.
Fuck. Let's be real, dude. Like, as he said, touring, you have 300 shows. Like, there has to be a couple times you're like, motherfucker, I am so over this right now.
Dude,
I'm
tired. It's very real.
I'm going through the fucking motion. I'm having a Monday.
It's very real. Yeah.
You know?
So I have to ask, I have shown my balls in a skirt to...
What a fucking
hold
weird
on, let me finish,
this is.
Because it's going to be going into the question.
This is definitely...
This is the weirdest transition, but it's a great transition.
This one's going on Facebook.
So I've shown my balls to... mind you, they were in, like, underwear, but they were shown to a sold-out group. When I was on stage, when I was on stage, we were playing our headlining show.
Memory care.
What is the craziest thing that you've ever done on stage?
Done? Oh god!
Did you kick your drum set over? Just fucking.
I've done that a few times.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't break my soul and stuff unless I was like, you know, had extras.
I can't think of the craziest thing I've done.
Or the craziest thing that you've seen happen while you were playing on stage.
There's a few of those. Here's one. So we were on tour with a band called Stitched Up Heart. Have you guys heard of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're kind of one of those label baby bands that
sure.
is just getting a ton of money thrown into them. We're on this tour with them, and we do tour pranks at the end of the tour. So like it's a thing. Like if you're on the last show of a tour, like watching it, you'll probably see pranks. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced that.
I don't know that I've been a spectator to the very last show.
Yeah, like
I'm pretty sure
if bands
seen...
get at all tight, the last show, there's pranks.
Sure.
It's just a part of life. And we did one to get a jump on them. We did one like the third to the last show, and we plugged a phone into the system and played fart noises in between their songs. So like Mixie, like kind of hot girl singer, just like they end their song and she's got her foot on the monitor and she's just like, how you guys doing tonight? Room just goes dead.
Fucking oh.
Dude, it was fucking hilarious. It was amazing. They were so pissed, dude. They were mad. And they ended up getting over it, but dude, they were not kind to us at all on the last show of that tour.
Bummer.
Dude, we played a show the day before Christmas Eve in Wisconsin, and right at the beginning of our set, they come on and just, they're like all dressed like elves and shit, and they have cups of glitter, and they're like throwing frosting at us and like putting frosting in our hair. I had a whole bottle of caramel syrup dumped over the top of my head.
You had to play the show like that?
The whole set. The whole set. I was playing with, like, sticky, slippery hands and, like, caramel in my hair and shit. They put, like, dick stickers all over my drums. That was funny.
That's funny, but the caramel sounds fucking god-awful.
That's just, like, wreck your traps and whatever.
Dude, so this venue is an old, like, abandoned elementary school, and there was, like, 700 people at the show. It was wild. But after the show, I'm like, I need to just wash my hands at least or something. And the water had gone out in the building. Like, they had a sewer backup and had to shut the water main off.
Fucking hotel, I guess. Or
dude, so, well, and we were driving home that night.
Oh,
so we just asked around, and some guy that owns, like, a towing truck company nearby drove me in his, like, tow truck over to his shop.
And hey, I boy.
In his shop. Yeah.
How you gonna pay me for this water? Dude. I wanna reiterate, just because Zach has, like, super interesting stories, do you have anything that comes even close? Because
your dream is...
He's way more fucking interesting than any of it. We've just been listening to him, and it's been fantastic.
Well, there's so much more, too.
I didn't want Drew to be like, why am I here type...
Oh, I love it. Drew is himself lived, like, three different movies.
Why? How? Just give us a little synopsis on this.
Dude, I don't even know where to start. I'm just stoked to be here because I get to see the setup.
And I know, it's fucking sweet.
Everything goes down.
Let me just give my impression of, like, maybe one of Drew. Boy. Like, I just feel like Drew has been in this scenario, like, at some point in his life.
The Cliff Notes version, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so at some point in his life, I just know Drew has been sitting in, like, negative 20 degree weather on, like a pile of hay, sharpening a fucking wooden stick with his pocket knife, probably also skinning a rabbit, and, like,
what, did you grow up on a ranch,
smoking a cigar,
no?
and contemplating ending it all.
Yeah, all right. Fair point. No, I just, I don't know. I grew up with, like, you know, there's, like, the extraordinary people in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people that are, like, really good at average, everyday things. I don't know how else to explain that, but.
I mean, yeah, I'm around.
Just certain professions and stuff like that.
My family was always just good at what they did.
Yeah.
But never, like, ventured, like.
Adventures and stuff.
I'm the first one to buy a different business aside from, like, the family business type deal, you know? So, like, I don't really consider myself being, like, good at...
That's why I always start my story whenever people are asking, like, well, what's your deal? It's like, well, man, you got to think about what I was started with. Like, what the stories that I was told. So, like, my dad...
Sure.
My dad was, like, a logger, a pilot, bush pilot. And he was, like, CIA.
Jesus. Hold the phone.
He was, like,
your dad was in CIA?
He was a division, like a branch.
Okay, yeah. Hold on. He was a pilot for a while.
Oh, yeah. So
he was in the CIA.
Then he skied.
Your dad is D.B. Cooper.
Yeah, that's him. He's D.B. Cooper.
Fucking
we
is.
Sold, no. We solved it.
Checks out.
Who even is D.B. Cooper? I don't even know.
I'm not familiar.
What the fuck?
The dude that stole a bunch of money and then jumped out of the plane back in, like, the 70s or 80s.
He hijacked a plane. 70s. He hijacked a plane in the 70s. With 200 requests. He hijacked the first plane. They landed. Everyone got off but him and four other people. And he got five parachutes and $200,000 cash. And then somewhere over Montana, Idaho, or Washington, or Oregon, he fucking... And he was never found again. And they have found... Some of the cash has washed up on...
Back river, in like the 80s.
Riverbanks and shit, yeah.
Just changed.
Because currency is tracked by their...
Yeah, the dollars.
Their numbers, yeah. Yeah, some of the currency has washed up and they've never found DB.
Never found the money, nothing.
Google DB Cooper.
That'd be wild. I'm going to have to look into that.
Oh, fuck yeah. There's full on HBO documentaries and shit on this thing.
That's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole. Have you
ever seen the movie Without a Paddle?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're searching for DB Cooper.
They're going to find DB Cooper's trouble.
Oh!
There we go.
Watch that movie.
That was the movie.
In a clicking. Good state of mind to be able to process.
Well, yeah. You're probably either fucking or you're partying.
Yeah, this is not a movie that I was fully dialed in on that.
Jesus.
That's funny. Yeah, man, I just had a lot of crazy stuff like that where, like, my family's life story is crazy.
CIA, a divisional. He wasn't a... Was he a spy?
No, it's a situation where private contractor situation.
Okay,
it's
just like,
got it.
Blackwater security type shit. Oh, exactly that. I know what fucking Blackwater... Those motherfuckers...
Should have wore my shirt.
They ain't nothing to fuck around with, man. You see some guy with a Blackwater flag, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go that way.
I wore a shirt one day, and I was hanging out with Zach, and I was like, I don't know what we were doing, but I was like, man, I probably should be wearing this. He's like, why the heck? I've never even heard of those guys. I'm like, there's some people that have heard of these guys.
There's quite a few people.
Shit.
But anyways.
They do the United States messy work.
They do what they need to do. What they're paid to do.
So, remember in Horrible Bosses when they were looking for wet work? And they accidentally, and they accidentally got the guy who peed on them? Drew's dad did what they actually wanted. Okay? the real wet work. No, dude, yeah, Blackwater, it's fucking... So, I know jack shit, but I know that they do whatever the fuck they want, and they make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they make some money. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bygone era. I mean, that got hammered out there. It's public policies and stuff kind of came out and kind of wrecked them. But there's a crazy story behind that. But I'm just the family I've grown up in, they were people that you'll never hear about in a newspaper.
Sure.
But when you hear their stories,
extraordinary shit.
Extraordinary stuff. Extraordinary stuff.
That's my situation. That's what I want as guests.
Yeah. Yeah, it's regular people. You'll never
regular people. Yeah, just have fucking crazy stories. Yeah.
So I mean, you start with that, and then that's where I was like, all right. I mean, I was just dreaming stuff up all the way through, growing up and everything. So at 12, 13 years old, I started breaking horses and playing on ranches, and then I kind of worked through that, and then I was working on a roofing crew for a while when I was like 14, and then my dad started teaching me how to run heavy machinery, and then next thing you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere running cows for, on 20,000 acres, and then you kind of move around from that.
Did you guys have 20,000 acres?
No, man. Oh, okay. I was a kid that grew up close to town, but never lived in town.
Oh, sure.
I was always out doing stuff. So then I got into a custom harvesting crew. That crew went bankrupt. I bought a couple semi-trucks, and I've done a ton of different things. I had a tech startup when I was 18.
Oh.
I pitched to BlackRock Funds. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
BlackRock Fund? Are they like
the BlackRock?
The huge hedge fund?
Like a $12 billion.
The massive hedge fund? Yeah. So BlackRock, arguably BlackRock, their hedge fund operates like some of the world's biggest corporations.
Yeah.
BlackRock is one of the biggest hedge funds in the world.
Oh, it's $12 billion, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's more than that. Is it $12 billion?
That's probably more.
I think it's more than that. It's like $70 billion.
Yeah, BlackRock.
You have to look up.
Maybe it's $112 billion.
Yeah.
BlackRock is fucking, they're a massive hedge fund. BlackRock Investment Management.
Market cap.
So the way my startup went was like most, where it looks probably more like a scam after a couple months because it didn't actually work out. But I had like a little startup there for a while.
Their assets, they manage $9.5 trillion worth of assets.
Fuck.
Dude, trillion. So it's one of those things that's like, okay, if you dive down conspiracy theories, BlackRock is mentioned in there with another hedge fund.
Yeah.
That they're two of the biggest ones that own the world.
They own the world. They manage the world.
They manage fucking like Walmart's money and shit.
Yeah.
That's scary to me.
Big money.
It's called an oligopoly.
Yeah.
It's like a monopoly, but it's legal.
Yeah.
So
that's
okay.
The money you don't hear about.
No.
The money that changes the world. This is 100%, dude. These guys make decisions for politicians.
They had some subsidiaries that came to what they called the Economic Summit here in Butte, Montana, a while back. Elon Musk came here. What's the guy from Google came here? I can't remember back then.
Oh, Sawi or whatever.
No, it was one before that. But then, like, the CEO of FedEx, Fred Smith, came. Okay. Anyways, all these guys, I kind of got into this group that let me go and talk to these guys and pitch to them. And because they picked, like, a certain group of entrepreneurs and stuff to go and try it that were different age groups. And I got to pitch my idea to him and everything. So that was kind of cool. And then I went back to D.C. and pitched it again.
Did the pitch work?
It was kind of a situation where if you hit so many users,
interested
with this much money.
Sure.
And I was at zero at that point. So I needed like 10,000 users. And then I go up from that. Like at 10,000 users, I was promised $250,000.
But you never got.
Couldn't get to it. It's an idea I still have and I still love. I actually trademarked a whole brand around it called Take Initiative.
Huh.
It was originally Teen Initiative, and it was pretty much, imagine a TaskRabbit situation, but it was for teenagers.
It was like Dare back in the 90s. Remember Dare?
Oh,
Remember,
like the drug and the drug thing? Thing?
Yeah.
Like Dare. Don't you remember that?
I don't think that's the same thing.
It's obviously thing. Not the same thing. I was making light of the situation, like the acronym Dare. Oh. Yeah, they printed it on the fucking all the cars and shit. We had assemblies and shit over this.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Yeah. No, it's just Take Initiative was the name, or the Teen Initiative, and then Take Initiative. But yeah, I get what you. I see the connection now.
Cool.
But I tried that, and then man, it's just been a wild ride trying a bunch of different things. Just about every 6 months, I try something else. I worked in the oil fields and welded pipe for 6 months between, Texas and North Dakota. And then I did the same thing, custom harvesting, ran $350,000 machines all the way from Texas to Canada.
I was going to say, those are the traveling guys, right?
Yeah, we travel around.
Like the movie Into the Wild? Yes,
yeah, where he goes and works on the farm.
Yeah, when he works with Zach Galifianakis and Vince Vaughn.
Yep, okay. That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's what everyone references. That's their only, like...
Well, Zach Galifianakis is teaching him how to fucking... explaining to him how to process meat,
Yeah.
You don't want to get the larvae, and he's like just a big fucking idiot.
Dude, that's
cool.
That's cool.
See those guys traveling, they make some damn good... fucking money.
Well,
doesn't it work out for the farmers? They're like, hey, yeah, come in here and harvest it. I don't have to invest in the equipment.
Yeah, I don't have to buy the equipment. I mean, we had probably $1.5 million of equipment. The guy I was working with is 28 years old. No, at that time he was 26. I was 19, 20.
Dang.
And you had ownership in that.
I didn't have ownership, but I was the guy running around trying to find deals and find jobs.
Oh, okay.
So
you were the main dude, basically.
GM. I was the guy that was talking to people. This was the kid that was the operations manager. Like, he was running everything. And then I was helping find and fill crew. And then I got to operate my own combine. So we had two combines. Like, that's kind of the glorified, that's the spot to be. That's where the guys that are kind of running everything run. You sit in the combine, your radio and bag, make sure trucks are on time. And then I jump out and run and go get other stuff done when I needed to or whatever. But tried that for a couple years and... yeah, it just kind of worked out to where I actually owned some of the equipment at the end. I kind of made a deal with his bank when he went bankrupt.
Oh.
But,
and you've sold that equipment since
then. I still have one of the trucks. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I bought like a $65,000 truck for $15,000 in the bank. Back.
Gangster.
What are you doing with it?
I got it sitting right now. This is the first year I've ever just done one thing.
Hoping.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to it eventually, dude. I just can't get away from heavy machinery. I love heavy machinery, running heavy machinery.
Okay, so just buy a fucking van trailer and plaster roast thorn on it and park it in someone's parking lot.
We've talked about this. I've talked about going and buying a reefer trailer and just painting our faces on it and just, like, putting the full team. Like, we could do that, blow up the roaster real estate team on the side of a 48-foot reefer van. That'd be insane.
I'm all about it.
So what made you guys link up and start... Because, so I remember you and Kyle getting, like, nationally recognized by EXP for your videos, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, we kind of came together it was really the right timing. Like, we were always friends through high school. We met each other first
in second grade.
That's right.
And I remember playing Hot Wheels on your parents' stairs or something like that. We were, like, throwing Hot Wheels on your guys' stairs.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't even remember.
I remember him. This kid was like a toe-headed kind of kid, like blonde hair and everything, like short hair though at that time. I just remember that, dude. It's wild.
That's so funny. I can't believe that. That's so long ago. But yeah, we kind of had kept in touch after high school, not really.
Yeah, Facebook friends.
Yeah, I mean, like, we hung out first couple years of high school.
Yeah.
We kind of reconnected there. And then when he started doing his band stuff and everything, he had to go find a different school. To kind of make that work.
Because I had to homeschool my senior year.
Oh, because you were touring?
I had to do it through Skyview. Yeah.
The private school we were going to is not going to let that happen.
No. Well, it would have been a waste of money. I knew by that point, I'm never going to college. I'm not going to, like, why would I go to Catholic school?
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
for real.
You know, so.
I regret going to college. That's for sure. But I went for 1 year.
That's my whole mission is to,
at least you only got a year.
Well, I went for football. And so I was like, fuck yeah. Let's do it. But obviously, I wasn't going to go to the NFL, so that was just a pipe dream of young kid type shit ass.
Totally.
You know?
But on my end, it was like, I've done real estate for like 3 years.
We've only been working together for less than a year. It's wild to think.
Now it's only been less than a year.
It's still never, only been less than a year.
Yeah, it's still crazy.
It feels
yeah.
like it's been like two or three years already.
We've had a couple transactions that made it felt like that.
Yeah.
Long process.
But man, I got 3 years deep. My first year, I made no money. I lost money because I couldn't get anything rolling. The next year, I was in the top 10% of realtors in Billings. And then last year,
so hold the phone. Top 10% of realtors in Billings.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have 1,000.
So that's out of 1,000. So I was in like the top 100 the second year. So I made I closed one house in Roundup that was $35,000 and one house at the very end of the year that was $200,000. But I had spent like my entire savings for the last 2 years and filled up like 3 credit cards trying to get shit rolling, like by promoting the videos.
Yeah.
Just all that shit. Because I was just doing videos on my broker at the time's houses. Like I wasn't getting a piece of any of them. And I was like just paying to make my own content, to put it out there, just seeing if something would work.
Damn.
And next year it all kind of came to fruition and worked. And then last year was my third year. And man, like, I started to get to a point where I was just like, this has kind of served its purpose in my life for me, monetarily, and like I've gotten this experience now of like being a realtor, and like,
sure.
I started to feel myself not have as much passion and desire for it. So I was like, okay, if this is something I'm going to keep in my life, I need to introduce a new facet of it that's going to make me feel something about it again.
Yeah.
And also, I need to take more of my time back to focus on music. And I started getting into like remodels and flips and my own investment stuff. So it's like, if this is going to stay in my life, for one, it has to have purpose to me outside of myself. And two, I got to get some of my time back. And that the only way the only thing I can think of is I need to get more people around me, because I was just trying to do pretty much everything on my own.
Yeah.
And trying to do all of the real estate stuff on my own with writing music and recording and trying to do my remodel. It's just not feasible.
Yeah.
So, man, the first person and the only person that came to mind was Drew, because I knew he had done real estate for like 3 or 4 years. I know his personality. I know his drive. And I was like, I don't even know if he's interested, but I just got to hit him up and see if he wants to hang out and like talk about some of this shit.
Start a real estate company.
Yeah.
That's what are you guys at a brokerage, or are you guys a real estate company? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of both, I guess, because we're going to probably get into some like investment stuff as partners too.
Sure.
And like do some of that together.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a shot in the dark, honestly. I was just like, I know I have to talk to Drew. I have no idea if he's going to be interested or not. But
it was kind of funny. My wife had been – I've been watching his videos take off for a while.
Sure, yeah.
I was pissed.
Who hasn't?
I was jealous. I was looking at it. I was like, God, how does this shit work? How does this work? But he's just being himself, man. It was the best thing about it.
People love goofy fucking people.
Well, just people like real people, man.
They're just
people jealous. Like genuine.
They're just
people
jealous. Like honestly, people. Lots of it is
that's
like
the thing.
Envy, because not a lot of people can –
Well, here's
one,
the
speak
thing.
In front of a camera.
Yeah.
Two, have that be themselves in front of a camera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing, too, is, man, if you want to talk about an uptight community, and one of those situations where you have, like, some pretty big brokerages here that have always just ran it very professionally.
Right.
Not very, you know, like, I was working for one of those brokerages.
Like, Irkshire Mathway, like them?
What? We gotta cut that out.
I didn't say their name.
I don't want anything coming back.
No, we're good. No, I would use them.
Yeah, sure. I was there. Yeah,
exactly. See, that didn't say anything. Besides, I said something totally different from their actual name, anyway. So really
I just don't want Buffett coming down on me, man.
The big buff, dude.
The big buff.
Yeah. He's coming.
You
for
know
you.
He's listening to this podcast.
You're gonna see an Instagram DM
for sure.
Yo,
pink.
WBuffett69_420. Hey, you little bitch.
Cease and desist.
Cease and desist or get fucked.
No, it was crazy to watch him blow up like that. I've been doing real estate since I got my real estate license when I was 19 or 20.
Okay.
I think I was. Yeah. So I've had it for 5 years, right about 5 years now. And I just part-timed it, man. I maybe did a deal a year. My main goal was I was running around meeting all these farmers and ranchers and I was custom harvesting. And then I was buying hay and trucking in and out of these places. And I'm like, dude, if I just land one ranch a year, $1 million or $2 million a year, you're going to get, you're going to make, you know, your salary for the year, $100,000. Yeah. And so it was like, all right, I'm going to use this because I hated trucking, man. I need to be a personable guy. I need to be a social guy. I love talking to people, teaching people, hanging out with people,
sure,
coming up with ideas and everything. So anyways, when he hit me up, my wife had actually been talking to me for a couple months. Like, you need to reach out to Zach. You need to talk to Zach. Like, you need to work with Zach. Like, just like, you talk about his videos all the time. And why are you like, why is that working for him? And it's like, just go and talk to him. Step out of that comfort zone. So anyways, because we were good friends, man. We had a blast.
We had a great time.
So anyways, yeah, long story short, we finally connected. And this was the year that I also was like, I'm not doing anything else. I'm going to pick one thing for once. I'm not going to do trucking, commodities trading.
The wealthiest people got really good at one thing.
Yeah, I mean, they do, but they also have multiple streams of income.
After the first one works.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's exactly why I haven't done some of my other ideas I want to do until Beard Mountain works and makes me wealthy.
Yep.
But dude, the wealthiest people got really good at one thing.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like you said, lots of them, the seven streams of income, but
yeah,
one stream changed their life.
Yeah.
They weren't doing seven at
one stream the gives you the option
exactly
to go after a couple exactly. Others.
Yeah. So that's why it's nice. So that's why it's nice to backlog those ideas. You're like, all right, I'll fucking at least buy the domain name.
Right. Well, the other thing is too, like,
it's $12 for a year.
This is all I study. It's like the building of businesses, brands, and everything. Yeah. And that was what Take Initiative was, this company that I was thinking about. So the thing is once you start making excess in that one thing, you're so good at that one thing, it now really probably only takes you 20% of your time.
1,000%
of the things that you need to do. Because you figured out, like, oh, this is all that really needs to be done.
Oh, fuck.
That's the beauty of the system. We're literally watching people that are watching real estate, watching us buy properties. You're watching Zach go through a process right now that he's able to step back to maybe 20% of his time is real estate. Now, a lot of the bigger deals, he's always, you know, walking around checking out. But I can call this kid, Wiz Kid, anytime and just be like, hey, man, this is my struggle. This is going to take me 2 or 3 hours to figure out in my head. And he's like, well, here's the two options that I've used before, and one of them usually works. And it's 20% of his time. And he can lock that up and get that done. And, yeah, I'm still working through it and muddling through it. There's a lot of stuff that just takes face time that isn't necessarily worth someone's face time that's been in it for as many transactions as he's been in. I won't say how many years, but I'll say as many transactions he's been in it.
Sure.
Because that's the deal. It's just how many times you see this process from how many different angles, and then how many times can you typically start to compose some kind of a standard program that's going to be able to answer about 80 to 90% of that. And there is still the time that you're going to have to come in and call in kind of a bigger hitter.
Okay.
So that's the system. And when you have two people that understand that and understand that, hey, it's a process for everyone that's going through it, it makes it work for Zach and I. He's at a different process when it comes to managing these transactions on the back end. And same with me. Like, this is all I wanted was in real estate. I literally just wanted someone I could pair up with and see how the sausage was made. Because I wanted to see, like, everything. If you're doing real estate, I want to be there everywhere. The coffee shop, everywhere. And I kind of offered that to a lot of people that I was trying to work with back at Berkshire Hathaway. And I'll just say it. But Zach was the first one. I was like, hey, man, 50-50. Do everything with me.
Yeah.
Do everything with me.
Well, and that's the part where almost every single realtor that's trying to, like, free up some of their time or whatever their motive is for bringing in another person, the pitfall of almost every single one is they get greedy. They don't want to, like, include the person who's doing all of the footwork.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the intellectual property of the clients is worth a lot. Yes. And especially if you're
leads,
still
being, the lead like systems. The leads,
sure. Like you're still the support person. You're still like, it's a never ending process of training together and learning together. Like there's still value that you're providing as that person, but like every single other situation I've witnessed with a realtor bringing on like another person, to help them out, sure, quote unquote, that person ends up leaving after 6 months to a year because they're getting like 10%, if that.
Well, they're getting 5%.
And they're, yeah, they're like being disrespected. Oh, they're getting shit on. They're like, yeah, it's just that's
lines of communication break down.
Yep.
The person that's in front is always going to save face. Sorry, my back end fell apart here, but the back end is doing 90% of the heavy lifting,
uh-huh,
and something was miscommunicated.
Of course.
That's typically how those things kind of break down. And the other thing is that Zach has that is so good is this mind of abundance. There's always another deal. There's always another option. I mean, there's times when you have to pull the trigger or not because you just need to learn how to commit.
Sure.
Everyone needs to learn how to commit in their first deal and just pull the trigger on something that may not work. But the situation is if you have a mind of abundance and you already have some other things going for you where you can step back, subsist on a little bit less in order to be able to build a bigger structure that's going to keep churning and keep making money, that's where you see the real entrepreneurs succeed.
Sure.
And the guys that don't make it. Because they're not willing to cut back their salary to be like, look, I just need to get this guy going to where he can stand on his feet, and then he's going to help two other guys stand, uh-huh, on their feet.
That's cool. Ebb and flow, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's you got to have some mindsets there, the right kind of mindsets. It doesn't matter your education. Doesn't matter, you know, your background. If you have that mindset that one person trusts the person in front, and then that person is so willing to reach back and truly pick, sure, the guy up behind him. Lots of guys say that they're like, oh, I want to reach back and help someone else out. Until you are literally going, all right, I got rent this month. It's $2,500 a month for whatever, blah, 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 living expenses. I can make it on that because I know that even though I know that kid's expenses is only $1,000 a month, if he gets $3,000 in his pocket, he's with me. This kid is going to be like, all right, man, I get it.
Yeah, it's tough to find.
That's tough to find.
You're a ride or die.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, kind of a ride or die. I mean, we're still very much individuals. I mean, we're two totally different personalities.
That's the other thing is we both have so much more that we want for each other outside of Rosethorn. Like,
this is still a stepping stone.
Dude, it totally is.
And everyone that comes into this, it's a stepping stone. It's not the end-all be-all. I don't know a whole lot of people there's people that do, and we would love to have them on the team, that want to do real estate for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, but neither of us are going to be just doing real estate in 20 years.
Oh, sure.
No. Like, probably not even in 5. You know?
Don't say that.
Well, we'll probably be doing real estate at Rosethorn for a long time.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we're going to – like, I'm at a different – stage of the process right now than Drew, but give it 2 years, maybe even like a year and a half, Drew's gonna be at another stage as well, and that's where we need to expand again.
Sure.
You know, it's just
we're literally practicing our management styles right now. Like, mm-hmm, he's practicing his management style on me and then the other guys that we have, and then I'm practicing my management style like just in a team setting, understanding how this works. Because you truly can't perfect anything in any business if you don't understand how team ergonomics
works. Right, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's one thing that I have always been horrible about is, like, giving structure. I would say that's probably one of my weakest links. And, man, so I've got a personal assistant as well that also helps both of us out with real estate stuff. But I got to the point where I just told her, Kate, I'm hiring you to be my boss.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep my shit together.
Give me some fucking direction.
Give me a list and like make me do this shit. Because if I don't have that, I'll sit and pace for like an hour trying to figure out what to do in what order.
Sure.
And I'll just take whatever phone calls come in and it's like you don't get shit done.
Yeah.
So yeah,
you gotta invite someone in your life to do some of that stuff. I mean, that's like
Yeah. Well, and dude, that's for anyone listening that's trying to boil the ocean and do everything on your own, just stop spinning wheels.
Oh, it
sucks. Ask for help. You're going to get burned. Now, you will get burned.
Fuck yeah.
Both of us have been burned.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when it comes to when you invite someone into that. But, man, you just got to know, all right, it's all just money. It's all just things. I'm still going to keep pushing forward. There's nobody that ever made it that quit.
Right.
You know, they just because they quit.
Fuck no.
So.
Failures are, I mean, they have to happen. You know, people come into your business, people come into your life, and then they leave sometimes.
Well, and that's something that's one of those things. You listen to some of these guys, it never stops. It's never the possibility of failing. There's people out there that will work with you for 15 years, and you'll find out on the 60th year they're embezzling for the last three.
Oh, yeah.
And just because of some kind of a system flaw, they decided that this place isn't going anywhere. They lost faith in the operation. Yeah. They got scared. Yeah. They wanted to take care of themselves. I mean, it could happen at your 40th year of working with somebody. And that is something that you just have to be okay with accepting that at any point, if somebody really wanted to end this, they could end it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just have to take precautions if you can, but still live with open hands.
Dude, that's an excellent point.
It is. It's a good message.
And it's so applicable to everything because that's applicable in the sense of like the fear of bringing other people in or partnering up with people or whatever. But man, why are we scared of anything? It's more so, I truly believe we're more scared of the feeling that we have about our failures than we are the failures themselves.
That anxiety alone. And it's so drummed up in society nowadays. It's just like
failing's so easy. Honestly, lots of the time after you've done it, you're like, wow, the repercussions really weren't that fucking bad.
Not bad.
At least I tried this. The very first vendor show that I ever did was a fucking massive failure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I learn not to do those things the next time. And then by like your fourth or fifth home improvement show, you're like, fuck yeah, I know 100% I'm gonna land that guy. I know 100%
exactly.
So those failures do help you along the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
They have to happen.
Well, they have to happen so you just know that it's not that bad.
Oh, it's really
always
not.
If you always reach back and go, hey man, I could be like, I could have it like that guy.
Oh yeah.
If you do the it's good here. Because it could be worse. If you just run calculation every morning you get up, it's way motivating to be like...
Anybody in the United States, no one here had to walk 7 miles for running water.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and put it on top of their head and pack it back.
Exactly.
And they typically pack it back to people that didn't put in any effort.
Exactly. Exactly. So, okay. Go on.
One last point on that.
Yeah, hit it.
I just recently heard like an analogy... like you said about it always being worse, or it can always be worse. So, man, I don't even remember where I heard this, but think about, okay, you wake up one morning, at the end of your bed is somebody with a duffel bag, and they're like, there's $1 million in here. Yeah. I'm going to give you this, but you can never wake up again.
Yeah.
Are you going to take $1 million? No.
No.
That means that you waking up again is more valuable than $1 million. So, like, every single day that you wake up, is better than someone just handing you $1 million.
Yeah.
Just putting it in like
money's horrible, man. Especially when when you have kids, like money is fucking horrible. Like people, like humans don't realize how, I mean, just like statistically crazy it is to like birth a child.
Yeah.
Like you hit the fucking lottery when you have kids, dude. And like
it's wild.
The double lottery when you have healthy kids.
Yeah.
Like I'm thankful every fucking day for having healthy kids, but it just makes other shit not fucking matter at all.
Well, and it's kind of that...
Especially the failures. It's like, oh, fuck, I could fail all day at business, but my fucking little tiny kids at home, they don't give a shit what kind of money I'm making.
Yeah. They don't care.
They don't fucking care at all.
Yeah.
They really don't. It means money is fucking... Money is horrible.
As long as dad comes back.
I fucking hate money. Yeah, money is fucking god-awful.
Well, but when you manage it, it's tough that it makes it... a decision, and it's the ultimate goal is for it to not be a decision.
Yeah, and
that work life balance,
and it's grown into making people monsters.
Yeah,
you know, it tears friends apart, it tears business partners apart, it tears fucking families apart. You know, like money's gross, dude.
Yeah,
you know though, if it wasn't the money though, would it be something else?
Most likely.
Yeah,
point, you're gonna be like, oh, cinnamon rolls are gross because then, like,
dude, money.
That dude goes and
money, makes more money, dude. Seriously, making money is just taking the express lane to figuring out people's true colors.
Yeah,
like that's literally all it is.
Well, people want money because it buys time.
Fuck.
People think that with money because that's the way that we've organized it in our minds for
hundreds of years. It's the only thing you can't make back.
Yeah,
it's time.
Yeah, it's time.
You can always make more money.
People think, though, that, well, if I have enough money, I could just go lay on a beach somewhere. I could just go do blah, 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 or just go do whatever. But, man, I think the true thing that's so, like, that releases so much dopamine it's not that money. It's that there's people that are willing to pay so much for you mm-hmm. and your time and the product that you create that that's the dopamine release.
Yeah, it's
somebody's
the customer relationship.
Yeah.
It's the like seeing a finished product and you're like, holy fuck, I did that.
Yeah.
Or holy shit, I bought this house.
Yeah.
Or, you know, holy shit, I paid for this school for my kid.
Here's a thought here. So when you associate all these different products and things and time and services of different people with what you're trading your hard earned money for. The other day I spent $140 on a camp stove. And that camp stove is only $140 to me, but it gives me a little bit of a feeling. It releases this thing in me that it's like, man, that's the wilderness. That's going out and getting in touch with blah, blah, blah. Like, it's associated with an emotion. And I'm willing to pay that much money for that emotion.
Yeah.
I get that emotion when I get this,
1,000%.
And if you can produce a product that is adhered to some kind of emotion, we're just paying for chemical exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wild thing to think
about. Uh-huh. Really, it's
really interesting.
It's a chemical exchange that you already have inside of you. And you've brought this up to me. It's a very interesting thing that we're paying so much money for different chemical exchanges. And it's valued differently in society. So that firebox stove.
Short bursts of fucking dopamine.
Yeah, but that thing's going to deteriorate, rust, and whatever, blah, 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 away. But then you come into an exchange where I'm gonna associate this with an exchange that's going to hold value over time, like a house.
Yeah.
This value, I'm going to have 20 years worth of feelings in this thing.
I'm gonna grow my family. My kids are gonna have their first steps.
Yeah, I mean, think about the environment that you were raised in, and how much money would your parents give to give you a better environment?
Yeah.
So I mean, you think about what a house would mean to you, because it's gonna give that feeling to five people.
Sure.
You know, a typical family or something.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing.
It is. It's a good point to end on. It really is. I like the message.
Equals.
Money,
chemicals.
Money does not.
Just go out and get those emotions.
Money, dude, just
figure out how you can have those without having to put so much time into
it. Is too.
And making that emotion turn into money and then turn back into emotion again. Just go from emotion to emotion.
And fuck the money. The money, making money is just a byproduct.
Yeah. And it'll happen.
Honestly, is. If
money will follow you.
It really did. Like, for instance, not to get drawn off and gone again, but take Beard Mountain, for example.
Yep.
Making guys fall in love with product and making a good quality product where I get emails every day saying, dude, I love this shit.
Yeah.
This is great. Making money is the byproduct of me having that customer relationship. Yeah. Like, I get way more satisfaction from talking to these people and them getting to talk to the owner. That makes them way happy. I could care less about the $24.
It's the, hey, your shit is fucking awesome.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
sweet. It really is.
Hell yeah.
Money is just a byproduct. So,
yeah. That's what's up, man.
Yeah. You guys, thank you very much.
That was awesome.
This was sick.
This has been fun.
This was a great episode. I dig it. First time having two guests, too.
That one, really?
Yeah.
First time.
Wow.
That's wild. Cool.
I had to break out the number four set of headphones. And
this is perfect. Player number four.
Yeah.
I like
it. Yeah, dude, we finally got to use the four-person
fucking. I know.
This is a great setup.
We just had a four-way.
Fuck yeah.
I love it.
Dude, I just.
I'm going to go clean off after this.
Fuck yeah. I'm not.
Jesus.
Anyway. I'm gonna keep that stain.
Afterwards, where you smell your fingers?
I still feel some shit on my lips.
We were so wholesome for just like 10 seconds.
All right, you guys, this was episode, did we say 18?
18.
Episode 18, The Beers Next Door. Again, we're here with Zach Oggins and Drew Gerber.
Let him plug himself. He's got to plug his next song. It's coming out.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Dude, let's hear it.
Pre-save my song, Nail Yourself to Me. It's on my Instagram bio link.
Nail Yourself to Me. Your Instagram bio. Use your Instagram just at Zach Oggins, or is it
just
gone?
Search Zach Oggins.
Zach Oggins.
G-O-G-G-I-N-S. Yeah.
Perfect. If you guys need a house in Billings and the surrounding Montana area, make sure you hit up Rose Thorn Real Estate. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
When I'm ready, when my kid's out of the school he's in, I'm going right there.
All right,
fucking A.
Bet.
Gonna do it. Sweet. Thank you guys.
Hell yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, we're appreciate over
it.
Now.
Thanks, guys.
Hell yeah.
Sweet. Thanks, guys. Hold on, let's get a picture real quick.
Picture. Gotta get a
That's not stop.